ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
Data centres are not digging anything up. They're not exploiting resources that are owned by the Australian people, but they certainly shouldn't be getting concessional prices for the electricity they use.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke has postponed a National Press Club address, a very unusual move where he was expected to announce sweeping cuts to immigration. The decision not to address the press club this week came less than 48 hours before the speech, with a spokesperson confirming it was clear that some elements of the speech would not be finalised. Meanwhile, Treasurer Jim Chalmers has moved to quell a brewing fight over the so-called widow's tax, unveiling a proposal to close the loophole. Independent David Pocock has broadly welcomed the move, with Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson labelling it a patch-up job by the government. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears.
David, great to have you back on the pod. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke was meant to turn up. I mean, it was booked. It's in the schedule.
Announced.
Yep. Turn up to the National Press Club and deliver a very significant speech, which was a big overhaul of visas, numbers, the immigration system. The reason being, the government has been briefing me for some time. They are working on something because they are aware that that stubborn net migration number is still too high, and they are aware that, you know, the political mood very much in this country, look at all the polling, there's reason that One Nation has been doing well. It's not this exclusively, but it has something to do with this. They believe they have to match a policy with the mood of the nation. So he's been working on this. Then friend of the podcast, Tom Crowley, broke a story overnight that basically there was what I feel very confident now after talking to some people was a split in the cabinet about some elements of the broader change. And they put the brakes on Tony Burke from going out and announcing it. That doesn't mean we're not going to have, David, a very big immigration overhaul coming. Couple of things, though. The Prime Minister's away this week. The Cabinet didn't want to tick off on this week then. That's what I was told by one of them. They thought Albanese's away, not wise to go ahead here. Was one reason. There are some issues around the family visas that some people are concerned about, particularly in communities where there's going to be some grumpiness about changes. Also international students, just a bit of argy-bargy. So I'm going to throw it to you now. This is, look, I keep telling people I'm watching The West Wing at the moment. You know, there was an episode I just watched called The Process Story. We're now in The Process Story, which is the cancelled speech.
It's what we live for, though, Peter.
Hello. It's Christmas today for me. But what I can tell you, though, is that The Process Story is now dominating, and what it looks like is, which is not helpful for the government, that there is some kind of split on immigration in the Albanese government.
Well, this is always good because my sources are obviously different to your sources, PK. My sources within the cabinet are, and perhaps this isn't surprising, playing down any suggestion there's a big split or a big fight within the cabinet. They're also denying this has anything to do with Anthony Albanese being on leave. That is not an issue, I'm told. But yes, there are some areas that hadn't been completely nailed down, and they didn't want to go out with a speech that still had some holes in it, particularly on the issue of immigration. You might be able to do that with some other issues and nail down the final details in the legislation to come, but simply give a speech that announces the direction you're going in. But with this one, the view was taken, obviously late, so this is on the Tuesday afternoon, the decision was taken to postpone this speech because it hadn't all been nailed down. They didn't want those who, the small number who do game the system to find ways around this if it hadn't been completely nailed down. And some of this is quite difficult to do in detail in practice when it comes to giving the government greater control over areas of the immigration system. And that's what this all comes down to. Remember that famous quote PK of John Howard. It's nearly 25 years old, the quote. We will decide who comes to this country and the circumstances in which they come. Now, yes, governments do set a lot of the rules when it comes to the immigration system, but there are demand-driven elements when it comes to skilled workers and family reunion visas, where the government, in the view of certainly those in cabinet who want to go down this path, don't believe the government has enough control. So that's what they're trying to do. And it's changes across the board, across different visa categories that we're talking here about: backpackers, family reunion visas, skilled visas. Some changes have already been made and announced by the minister, but these further changes, yeah, look, I don't know exactly when we will see them, but it won't be Thursday this week. It might be next week or the week after.
Yeah. So like everything, especially when different people are talking to you out of about confidential meetings, there's nothing more confidential than cabinet. What you say and what I say are both true, right? Because they're about perspectives. So I've spoken to a few people who've said Anthony Albanese not being there was key, right? So I feel very confident about that. That was certainly how some people felt, and that's they were like, with some bits not quite done and dusted. The Prime Minister being around is pretty important for that sort of detail.
But you would think they would have booked this press club speech before Anthony Albanese goes on leave, right?
Oh, definitely. Well, that's a surety. So then it's a question of, that's why we here on this podcast give you what we know. And I can assure you, given it's a full cabinet, that there are bits we don't know, right? So yes, booked some. You know, people speak to me on the condition of anonymity. They say Elbo not being here though, and one person said, and Tony Burke trying to rush to get this out, even if he'd booked it. Well, we're not going to be under that pressure. We want to get it right. Back to your point. So in terms of whether there's a big or a small dispute over the details, both you could argue, right? Depends what you consider big or small, right? You know, it's not like the PM didn't know this was coming. Tony Burke has been working on this. They have discussed this. This is not like some brand new thing. It's not in its infancy as a proposal. But there are contentious parts. That part that you just mentioned, I just want to dwell on it for a second, which is tougher family visa rules. Don't underestimate how prickly that is in the community, right? These are people who want to get like their, you know, nana, their yaya, their, you know, here to Australia. Often they've come on tourist visas, then they apply. If that door gets shut, you can see how there are some people nervous about how that will play out in the community.
So we don't know exactly what they're going to do on the and it is worth talking about where this is all heading in a policy sense, what they're going to do on the family reunion visas, because technically it's meant to be demand-driven, right? If someone meets the conditions, an Australian citizen marries someone who's living in Australia, they are entitled to come here under that family reunion, their kids as well. So Tom Crowley's reporting suggested that those who come on a tourist visa and then apply for that family reunion while they're here in Australia and can then be put on a bridging visa, access Medicare and so on, that some of those rules would be tightened up to say you've got to apply offshore for that family reunion visa. So that would put people in a much longer queue than they already are to get here on one of those family reunion visas. So you're right, heading down that path is going to obviously create some angst in migrant communities. Look, is that something, though, that the government is willing to wear, perhaps thinking, well, you know, are they going to really go and vote for One Nation or the Coalition? Because they are very keen to drive down that net overseas migration number. And there aren't a lot of levers that they have at their disposal. So they're looking at a whole bunch of levers. And I think, PK, you know, while they'll play down that this is being driven by One Nation, I mean, what did we hear at the Labor conference in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago? It was
One Nation.
They don't have that much time between now and the election to deliver a reduction in the net overseas migration. It keeps overshooting the budget forecast. It certainly did last year, the year before. And the view that I was told within cabinet is these days, you know, the net overseas migration forecast in the budget's always missed, but these days it's now seen as a hard target. And if you miss it, that's a big deal. So they've got to try a lot harder to hit it and to get it down. If they can't go to the election saying, look, we've got that net overseas migration number down, below that 300,000 figure and have that as a deliverable, that's going to be a problem for them. So they've got to pull some of these levers, even if it means, yes, upsetting business groups, perhaps some migrant communities as well, because whatever they do on skilled visas as well, you're going to have various business groups pretty upset by what they're going to do here. So it's a cost they're willing to pay to tackle this issue.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. Just in defence of Tony Burke too, he has been actually given this S sandwich.
Yeah.
Here it is, drive down the numbers. He's tried over the last few months, quietly introducing some other changes, increasing visa application fees across the board. The budget's going to collect a lot more there. Ministerial directives ordering officials to prioritise onshore applicants over offshore applicants. Mm. He's done all this, but it doesn't move the needle enough. So whether there is some contention clearly in the cabinet about some elements that are, I don't think anyone has clearly reported exactly where the sort of division is, but some, let's just call it some, whether you want to say it's at the high end or the low end, it's irrelevant really, that was enough that it didn't get the tick off to be announced. That was enough.
And I think in Tony Burke's defence, he wouldn't do this lightly, right? Having announced and locked in and have had this press club appearance promoted, he would have known that postponing it, calling this
the process
address,
story.
Yeah, well, it's a process story, but it means he's going to take a hit, right, for not having nailed down or got cabinet's approval, whatever it is, nailed down the exact details. And getting the details right on this stuff, it's one of the most litigated areas of government, right? The migration decisions and migration law, you've got to be absolutely bulletproof. He didn't want to go out there with something that he might have to then, clean up or mop up in a week or two once holes were exposed. So you've got to make sure that it's watertight before announcing. Now, look, is it a messy look? Yes. But is it better to absolutely be sure before announcing it? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, you said it's a reaction to One Nation. I agree with that, but it's not exclusively just One Nation.
Mm. I should point out, people in Labor playing that down, saying, no, it's not. It's not to do with One Nation and so on, but I think we can
We can count, right? 1 + 1 equals 2. But I don't think it's only One Nation. Whatever you think of the coalition not being, very good at advocating at the moment and struggling, they've also been going hard on issues around immigration for some time. So, there's two political outfits of the right that are gaining traction on some level, and together, obviously, they are a powerful force if they're ever to be together. So that's one element. And then there's just generally community sentiment, and that's been growing as well. Like, if you separate that from the nexus of the political parties people like that might support, you can be a Labor voter that's a bit cranky with Labor that immigration appears to be too high. What I'm saying?
Absolutely. Rightly or wrongly, it's there. That sentiment.
It is there.
People are struggling with cost of living, and some at least are blaming migration for what they see as a decline in their living standards. And the government can't ignore that. I mean, you look at with those polls that go through issue by issue, what's the issue that One Nation streaks ahead on? It is migration, almost entirely. So the government has to be conscious of that.
Mm. So they will land something. The Prime Minister not there this week. He will be there next week, I can assure you. And I don't think they're going to delay on this very much, because the politics gets actually harder for them the longer they wait. So, watch that space.
Yep.
I suspect you might see a different treatment for how it's maybe announced once the Prime Minister arrives too. That's a bit of speculation from me. I'm not saying I know that, because I don't think that's been decided yet. Let's change topic though, because Labor has unveiled a fix to the so-called widow's tax loophole.
And there's a nice little segue here, PK, because we're just talking about making sure something is watertight and not having to clean it up a week or two or a month or two.
On Water Matters have been very sloppy here. So to explain this, under Labor's first tranche of tax changes, negative gearing will be grandfathered, you'll know that, but a person who inherited their partner's share of a jointly owned property could be treated as having acquired it after the grandfathering cutoff and would therefore lose that tax advantage. It disproportionately expected to impact women, you know, widows or people divorced. David Pocock first raised concerns in June. Jim Chalmers said he would move to correct the issue. But there was no timeline on it, and that was the issue, wasn't it? It kept growing. He said he'd fix it, but it wasn't fixed.
So if you believe the government, this is all very normal, passing various bits of legislation after the budget to ensure that the outcome is consistent with what they announced on budget night. This is definitely not a clean-up job after realising the unintended consequence was this widow's tax, or, you know, the change that was going to hurt women predominantly as widows or divorcees. Definitely not a political back down or a patch-up job. This is all just very normal. That's the line from the government here. A couple of points. It is always better, PK, for governments to listen to feedback and problems that arise and ensure that you have a better policy outcome. That should be encouraged, right? They're doing what they can to make sure there's no unintended consequences. This does, however, have the appearance of an oversight that's been corrected after David Pocock brought it to attention. He had been contacted by a domestic violence victim going through a divorce who was unable to refinance an investment property that she co-owned with her now ex-partner, raised it with the treasurer, and Pocock's now broadly happy with the fix. He wants it passed as soon as possible. I don't know about you, though. Does it need to go through in the next 2 weeks? They've got this consultation period that I think doesn't end until the end of that sitting fortnight. The change doesn't apply till July next year. Does it need that sort of rush to go through in the next 2 weeks, or is it better to have the consultation and make sure it's
well, process-wise, it's much better to go through the proper process, as you say, sure. But, and the but matters, politically, oh, yeah, no, you want to send a message that you're fixing this and stop the kind of cauterize the wound, right? Like, don't you think?
I think so. I think, look, and
They're two different questions.
Yeah, this should deal with the pressure that was there on this so-called widow's tax element of the changes. Worth noting, there are a couple of other things in the draft legislation they put out there Tuesday night as well. One is the definition of a newly built property. So as people might know, budget night, the announcement is you can still negatively gear newly built properties. What is a newly built property? The change last night says a property will generally be considered new where it genuinely adds to housing supply, provided the property was acquired within 24 months of a certificate of occupancy being issued, not the 12 months set out in the budget. So they're extending that to 2 years a property can be listed as newly built. That helps developers, right? They were worried that this would make it very difficult for them to get some developments off the ground if people couldn't negatively gear, if there was a change in the title of the property in the first 12 months. So this gives them 24 months. The other, there's a third change as well to do with exempting from the new 30% minimum tax on capital gains any gains that are distributed to beneficiaries via genuine testamentary trusts and so on. That was announced by the Treasurer as well. So there are a few changes there. Will there be more to come? Who knows? I think the bigger political problem, though, for the government, PK, and all of this is the property price issue, that big issue around the dip, the fall, whatever you want to call it, in property prices, how far that's going to go. Some of the forecasts about a 10% dip. Clearly, that's going to be the bigger headache now for the government.
I'm glad you've raised it. That is, they are a little nervous. Mm. I wouldn't say that it's in full panic, and not what I've assessed yet. But yeah, there is a little bit of nervousness around this. One of the areas of nervousness, and I'm sure you've picked this up a bit too, is yes, there are price falls, but the exact cohort they needed the price falls to happen for, which is at the first homeowner entry market level, that's not really where you're seeing the biggest impact.
Yeah,
of this.
I heard Jacob make that point on this podcast
earlier
in the week. Right. Well, if it's not actually falling for or becoming any easier for those first home buyers.
But it is at the higher end of the market and every other end, sorry, every other part, right? So when people like Tanya Plibersek say there's no better time to be a first home owner or get into the market, that framing, sure, you would think there'd be flow-on effects coming forward, but the much higher fall in house prices is absolutely psychologically bad for the economy, like more broadly in terms of consumer confidence, and also I think bad for the government because if people are feeling that level of sort of despondency, worry about Don't you think that's a problem?
It affects their consumer behaviour. Absolutely. Absolutely affects sentiment. If your house price is the value of your biggest assets falling, you're going to be more nervous. So,
and the government's saying it's all good.
Yeah. Government's right to point out that there have been bigger dips over the last 10 years or so. 2018-19, under the coalition government, there was a bigger dip than the one we're experiencing now. There was a dip when rates started rising post-COVID. Mm. We're seeing this dip at the moment. I think, look, it probably is still too early to judge how damaging this is going to be for the government, because I think when spring is typically when you see, you know, the market start to rise. If that doesn't happen this coming spring that we'll head into in a month or so, that's when I think the government will start to get a bit more nervous. We've got a rate decision next week. Everyone's expecting no change. So you would think in normal circumstances the market would start to pick up in spring, but if the government's budget changes are weighing that much on the market, more than the Treasurer and the Treasury forecast, that we'd still see growth but 2% lower than otherwise, yeah, that's when the government will perhaps start to panic a bit.
Mm, yeah. Not quite full panic, though, is my vibe. Is that your vibe too?
Yeah, I agree. Mm. Yeah, they're still able to say, well, we've had bigger dips in the past under the other side. Let's see what happens over time. You know, housing isn't a short-term thing. It's a longer-term investment and it's still going to grow. You've got, you know, the acting PM, Richard Marles, saying some of this concern is overstated. We'll see whether he's right or not. I just think, yeah, it might still be a little bit early to judge just how damaging this is going to be for the government. But they won't want it falling much beyond where it has. And they certainly won't want that forecast 10% fall that some like the NAB are making.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, just finally, it's again a Victorian story, but in the next couple of months, David and I will be talking a lot about Victoria.
All the good stories are coming out of Victoria.
Kind of, it's true. Good or not so good? We say good the way journalists use the word good. Big is what that really means. First test for Victoria's new premier has emerged. So Victoria's anti-corruption watchdog, it's called IBAC here in Victoria where I live. It ain't no ICAC though, my friends, let me tell
you. Just explain that too, PK.
Okay. So it doesn't have public hearings. It does its work in secrecy. It has really not enough teeth. I remember sort of when I was back at the Australian newspaper when IBAC was being actually constructed, you know, we were sort of really kind of engaged in what it would look like. And I've got to say, it's been a toothless tiger. It's been disappointing. I know that ICAC in New South Wales has its critics, and I see some of those arguments sometimes and how it can impugn the reputations of some people who really, you know, haven't been responsible for corruption or doing anything bad. But, oh my goodness, isn't disinfectant amazing, like in terms of the sort of impact it has on the way people think about the way they behave. So in this case, Victoria's anti-corruption watchdog, which exists secretly doing its work, it's found serious and concerning conduct by senior public officers, including ministers, MPs, public servants, during what was a very bitter pay dispute with the state's firefighting union. IBAC stopped short of making any findings of corrupt conduct. Instead, warning such behaviour raised the risk of corruption. It's a damning report, though, but it's all very general as well.
Yeah, and obviously the no finding of corruption will be a relief to some in Labor. But let me read you this quote, because I think this goes to the culture of government, right, that the new Premier Ben Carroll's going to have to respond to and talk to. The matters investigated in Operation Richmond may have occurred some time ago, but the corruption risks and vulnerabilities highlighted, improper influence, failures in ministerial conduct, failures by senior public servants to act impartially, and the politicisation of appointment processes for public sector boards are serious and persist in Victoria's public sector. PK, I think that really sums up the broader problem here for the government in Victoria, right? This culture that allows that to happen, and the fact that it's serious and persists in the public sector, not just the government, but in the public sector as well.
Yes. That point you made, though, just at the top of what you were saying about it didn't find corruption.
Yeah.
Sure. But this report shows it's the whole system stinks, that it's stunk under the Andrews government in this negotiation.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it shows. We have an election in 4 months. There's a new Premier, Ben Carroll. He says he's going to take it seriously. He's saying all of the right things. But I heard the questioning of him, and Heidi Murphy, a very excellent journalist, was pushing him and saying, hang on a minute, you're around the cabinet table. Mm. And so he tries to distance himself, David, but at the end of the day, he was around the cabinet table, David.
Yeah, as often as he wants to say, I'm not Daniel Andrews, I'm not Jacinda Allen. Yeah, he was sitting there, he was in the room. You can't completely wash your hands of all of this.
I'm not David Spears, and yet here we are hanging out.
Here we are, that's right. This, you would think, is going to be a difficulty for Labor, certainly for the next few days, and who knows, into the campaign. I think it strengthens the case for what he's emphasising about having a royal commission and zero tolerance for corruption, and all of that's great to hear. At the end of the day, this should give the coalition and the opposition leader, Jess Wilson, a further boost. You would think she's already, I think, demonstrating, and you can see this in the polling, a number of polls, that the Liberals are finally getting their act together a bit more in Victoria and are well-positioned. Still going to be, anyone's guess as to how the seats will fall on the night. Mm.
Can they continue not to eat each other and their young until election day?
No, but it'd be a brave person to predict, that the Liberal Party can survive through election day without that in Victoria.
I mean, their record is not great.
No.
It appears that the hunger might be finally there, hey?
Yeah, and look, these sort of things are a test for a new Premier who hasn't really been tested much in that role. So let's see how he handles the pressure that'll come over this one.
That's it for Politics Now today. David, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, PK.
And David, two things. You've got a guest booked for Insiders on Background already, which is very, very organised of you. Who is it?
Rachel Noble, former head of ASD, the Signals Directorate, so one of our former top spies, but particularly strong on AI and cybersecurity. There's just so much going on in AI, but it's a great opportunity to hear from someone who's been in the know and at the coalface about all of this. So looking forward to that conversation.
Excellent. And in exciting news, it's also the 25th anniversary of Insiders this week.
Yes. We're 25 years old. So we're going to be marking that. We're going to be having, not just a little, celebration of Insiders, but a look at how politics and the way the media works with the politics, the big changes that certainly you and I and many of others have lived through and witnessed over the last 25 years as well. So, and a couple of special guests joining us Sunday morning.
Awesome. And Fran will join me tomorrow for the party room. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to theparty room@abc.net.au. And Mel Clark and I will try and answer your questions. See you, David.
See you, PK.